This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, June 9th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, legal issues in the news. Amy Guida tells us why some of those sometimes ridiculous-looking consumer warnings really do play a role. We'll also have a forecast from AM 580 meteorologist Scott Olthoff as we begin another possibly rainy week. First, a look at today's news. President Bush has declared a third of Indiana's county's disaster areas because of record flooding over the weekend. Bush ordered federal aid to supplement state and local funds in the areas hit by severe storms and flooding beginning Friday. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels sent a letter to Bush requesting that a major disaster be declared immediately. As much as 11 inches of rain swamped parts of Indiana Saturday, flooding homes, threatening dams, and closing several roads and highways. And more rain is on the way. The heavy rains on Saturday morning stretched into central Illinois. Some evacuations took place in the Moultrie County town of Lovington, which is now cleaning up once the water subsided. But observers are watching river levels again as several inches of weekend rainfall drain away. And again, there's the prospect of more rain. ComEd crews worked overnight to restore power to about 15,000 Chicago-area customers who were still in the dark from weekend storms. Crews also worked to clear seven down high-voltage power lines that closed portions of Interstate 57 for the second day in a row yesterday. Teams in the National Weather Service spent Sunday surveying the damage. They want to study Saturday's tornadoes in the Richland Park and University Park areas to determine their intensity and path. Illinois may not have enough money in its unemployment reserves for a lengthy recession. That's according to a study by the National Employment Law Project Advocacy Group. Lynette Kalsness has more.
Economists recommend that states have enough saved to pay a year's worth of unemployment claims. Yet the Law Project's Andrew Stettner says Illinois only had about 4 months of reserves at the end of last year.
A state like Illinois that is nearly insolvent or inadequately funded, category, does have some time, to get ahead of it and potentially make changes.
Stettner says he hopes the study encourages leaders to shore up reserves in good times rather than cutting benefits and raising taxes when times are bad. If the state runs out of money, workers still get their benefits, but Illinois would have to borrow from the federal government with interest. The Illinois Department of Employment Security could not be reached for comment. I'm Lynette Kalsness.
After putting projects off for a while, Illinois' Department of Transportation now has the money to again maintain Illinois' highways and roads. We have that story from Amanda Vinicky.
The Illinois Department of Transportation faced a real challenge this winter, says spokesman Mike Claffey.
It was one of the harshest winters in many decades, frankly. We budgeted about $40 million for snow and ice clearing operations, and we spent more than double that, close to $86 or $87 million. That covers things like fuel, road salt, overtime for our personnel who are out there around the clock in bad weather, and also pothole patching.
On top of it, Claffey notes, was the rising price of gas. Claffey says, as a result, IDOT scaled back operations this spring. A new law fills the agency's budget hole with an extra $20 million that makes it possible for IDOT to get on the roads again. Claffey says IDOT's already started filling potholes, cleaning up debris and roadkill, mowing medians, and trimming trees. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
A spokesman is defending Governor Blagojevich's proposal to move 100 Department of Transportation jobs out of Springfield and into southern Illinois. Brian Williamson says the move would bring, in his words, real jobs with real people spending real money to a region of the state that sorely needs it. In an ad in yesterday's editions of the State Journal Register, the mayor of Springfield scolds Blagojevich for the proposal to move the jobs. Tim Davlin says the transfer would hit Springfield the same way a mine closing would harm southern Illinois or a factory closing would affect Rockford. Money for the Sunday ad came from the Springfield Chamber of Commerce and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, among other groups. The southeastern Illinois town of Grayville once thought it was getting a state prison and hundreds of jobs to go along with it. That number occurred, but Sean Crawford reports the community now hopes the state returns land given for the project.
Despite over 5 years having passed since Governor Rod Blagojevich scrapped the Grayville prison project, the state still holds title to nearly 250 acres there. The city bought the property and gave it to the state. Grayville also extended sewer and water lines to the site. Republican Senator John Jones says that location could be prime for commercial development if the state would just give it back. His legislation requiring the land be returned is on the governor's desk, and Jones says Blagojevich told him he'll sign it. Jones says looking back, he understands the governor's decision to halt construction on the prison.
I don't totally disagree with his decision. It was upsetting at the time, not only to me, but all the residents of southeastern Illinois. But, you know, we've still got prisons that's not completely full right now that we built new. And so maybe it was the right decision. The past is the past. We need to move forward, and we need to convey this to the city of Grayville.
Jones says there's been interest in the property, and the state owes the people of Grayville the opportunity to improve their local economy. I'm Sean Crawford.
For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. You've probably seen websites or emails collecting consumer warnings that someone found particularly ridiculous, but those warnings are there for a reason, even when they seem silly. Commentator Amy Guida takes us on a wild subway ride in this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
I used to practice law in Washington, D.C., and I worked on a number of cases involving subway injuries. If an escalator in the subway stopped suddenly or someone got his fingers caught in the side of an escalator, I handled the case for the company that maintained the escalators. That means that I'm profoundly aware of the dangers inherent in certain subway systems and similarly aware of the multiple warnings of those dangers. Let me put it this way. You know those warning signs about holding the handrail and holding a child's hand on the escalator and not using an escalator to transport a stroller up to the next level? Those are there for a reason. Accidents happen, and those warnings help protect those who work on subway systems from liability. Now the rest of the story. I'm riding on the subway in New York City recently, and I notice a poster, one in a series of safety posters printed up by the Metropolitan Transportation Authority. It reads, "Surf the web, not the train," and "The only safe ride is the inside." And I'm not joking about this. There's a picture of a man grabbing the outside of a subway train, like a far less buff Spider-Man clings to a wall, and hanging on for the ride and for dear life. Yep, he's riding a subway car on the outside. A couple of weeks later, an announcement comes over the intercom during another one of my subway rides, something like, "Ladies and gentlemen, for your safety, please do not ride on the outside of subway cars." Now, I'm a lawyer who's well-versed in warnings on subway systems. I know how carefully worded the warning messages are to avoid liability. But never in a million years did I think it would be necessary to warn about the dangers of riding on the outside of a subway car, clinging to the door as would the common housefly. So I set out to find any reported court decisions, or reports in general, involving people who ride on the outside of subway cars, thinking that something must have sparked this safety campaign. I can now tell you that some people have more brain power than others. That whole surf the web, not the train thing, that's because some actually ride atop train cars until they jump off or a tunnel decides to do it for them. Others actually do ride as the would-be Spider-Man on the outside of subway cars. One guy actually managed to make an obscene gesture at a video camera operator just before he fell off. Those train surfers haven't sued, based on the reported cases I've read at least. You might think that that's because they're dead, or because no judge would allow the case to get beyond a very preliminary motion to dismiss, filed the instant the complaint reached the defendant's desk. But you'd be wrong. That's because I found several cases involving people who take related risks in New York and then sue for their injuries. And yes, some of the cases are really sad, like the boy who died when he rode atop an elevator, or the teen who died while attempting to view a clandestine graffiti mural inside a working subway tunnel. But it's hard to conjure up much sympathy for the man who opened a window on a subway car and stuck his head out while the train was moving. These cases sometimes get further along in the court system than you might think. That head out the subway car case? It took an appellate court to finally toss the matter, writing boldly that such an action is undeniably fraught with danger and that anyone who would do it has no concern for personal safety. So I'll look upon the poster in the New York City subway system featuring the man hanging on for dear life on the outside of a subway car with new respect. Not for the man, of course, but for the entity that may become a defendant in a case involving Spider-Man someday. You've been warned, Spider-Man. You've been warned. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. A flash flood watch remains in effect through tomorrow morning for the northern two-thirds of Illinois and for central Indiana. Yep, we'll see more rain in our forecast. Humid today, mostly cloudy in Illinois with periods of showers and thunderstorms. Becoming cloudy in Indiana with showers and thunderstorms moving in. And highs today ranging from 77 in the north to 93 in the south. The forecast high for Champaign-Urbana, 84 degrees. Scott Olthoff says tonight we'll see periods of showers and thunderstorms in Illinois. It will gradually end toward the morning, though. Rain continuing in Indiana overnight. Lows from 59 north to 69 south, 62 in Champaign-Urbana. Tomorrow, becoming partly sunny in Illinois and even less humid. In Indiana, scattered morning showers giving way to partly sunny skies by afternoon. Tomorrow's highs from 80 north to 86 south, 82 in Champaign-Urbana. Then 2 days of sunshine for Wednesday and Thursday. The high Wednesday, 87. Thursday's high, 89. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, June 9th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, Agricultural Programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.